Okay, so what we're going to do, guys, is we have got this seminar session called Fearless Generation. Everything's called Fearless. We're talking about the younger generation. What we'd like you to do, if possible, we'd really like this to be people working around tables. So if you're in here, could you maybe join one of our tables so we can get a bit of group discussion? That would be great. It is about fearlessness, so you might just need to speak to some folk that you don't know. That would be amazing. Okay. Say hello, introduce yourself. Great. So what we're going to do, I'd really encourage you to be fearless. And what I mean by that is this. If there are questions, I need people to be fearless in this and actually ask questions. Because one of the big problems, we've got the 1% decline that Glenn talked about this morning, 2% decline annually on just attendance to churches. Actually, what we're going to do is we're going to explore a wee bit about what's called the Gen Z. That's those under the age 24 and under. And actually, some of the catastrophically difficult things for us to deal with, if we're honest. So we need to be honest about things. We need to be honest about what that means, what the implications are for how we do our youth programs, if we even do youth programs. Is programs the right word to use? All of these things we need to think through together. So I want to encourage you to be fearless when you're talking, to ask the questions you actually want to ask and talk with the people and hopefully learn in the room here. Okay, I also want to be fearless in that I don't want this to be a time that's just an information transfer time. I am not going to just talk and go, here's a whole bunch of stuff to think about, goodbye. That's not the plan here. What we really want is this to be a more experiential. And by that, I want to, first of all, recognize that the Holy Spirit is present here. And this is not just about concepts and ideas. There'll be a bit of that in this seminar. But actually, you guys will have churches that have real pressing issues and desires. And we really believe that in the midst of this room, God could really speak into that situation, give ideas, give insight, give perspectives that are going to be helpful to you guys as you go back to your church. Also, hopefully, there's going to be connections in here. And I want you to be fearless in the way that you approach one another and speak to each other in terms of sometimes it can feel a bit socially awkward to turn to the person next to you and talk to them, but it's in the context of fearlessness. So let's just try and do that. Okay. And as we all know, it's perfect love that casts out fear. So rather than fearful conversations, let's have loving conversations with each other as we go through this as well. Okay. So what we're going to do, I'm going to just share a wee bit at the start, and then we're going to hear some stories. We're going to ask some questions around the table for you to talk about. It does not matter if you do not consider yourself to be a youth work expert when I ask the questions that I ask. You're a follower of Jesus. You're involved in a local church. It's all of our problems, all our insights, and we actually all have wisdom and value that we can learn from each other in here. So please do not sit here going, I'm excluded. I don't understand young people. I can't understand this or do this. You have stuff that's in there because despite the fact that there's trends and there's technology and there's iPads and all that kind of stuff, it's the same Jesus, it's the same basic gospel message that has been doing quite well for a couple of thousand years now, okay, and will continue to do well, and is doing well globally, although we maybe have a few difficulties here in the West. Okay, so the aims, what I'm aiming for is I want to do a wee bit of forming. So I do want to talk a wee bit about Generation Z, and I want to talk about some of the options that are available when we work together as churches that you can tap into as a church. Okay, so we're going to hear some stories of folk who are doing that. We want to tell some stories that are encouraging, that actually young people are engaging with faith, that young people are coming to faith, that our young people are trying great things for God and with God just now currently. And also, I really want to be this a place where you are involved in the process. So I will ask questions and I will leave time for you guys just to get around tables and answer questions together and learn from each other as well. Okay, I want it to be involved. Okay, let's just start at the beginning. I'm going to talk about something. I'm not that clever. I just read a few books, okay? I'm going to tell you all the books I read and then you can realize that I've shamelessly ripped them off for this presentation, okay? First book, I'm going to give you two really good books to get hold of if your church is really considering trying to raise a fearless generation of young folk, okay? The first is a book called Growing Young. It's an incredible resource. It's been written by the Fuller Institute in America, but it is very, very, very transferable for a Scottish context. It does not matter if you are an inner city cool church with tight jeans and tattoos and beards, Des, or if you are a country church. The principles within it are transferable whatever your context are. I want to just advocate that as an incredible resource. Growing Young, there's a website with lots of free stuff on it, which is always good. But the book itself is a great book. The second book that I'm going to reference a lot, particularly at the start here, is a book by a man called James Emery White, and it's called Meet Gen Z. Meet Gen Z. Okay? I am, despite the fact I try my very best to be described as a millennial, I fail miserably on all the... I keep looking for age groups that start in 1978, and none of them really do. They all start about 1982, 83. Okay, I'm a Gen Xer, okay? I'm not going to say who you are, but there's obviously some baby boomers in here as well, okay? There's some other Gen Xers. There's what's after Gen X. There was this thing called the Millennials or Gen Y, which were those that were coming into adulthood at the turn of the century. And we talked a lot about them, and marketing got very excited about them a few years ago. But now everyone's talking about Gen Z. That's those basically under the age of 24 now. Okay, so if you're a millennial, you're now old. Okay, if you're younger than that, you're technically a bit of a millennial, but you're really called a Gen Z or something like that. Okay, James Emery White, he's a church leader who has a theologian and an author as well. But his church has found some real fruitfulness in the gospel finding its roots in unchurched and de-churched young people coming to faith. 70% of his church are younger folk who have come to faith and are on a discipleship journey from out with the church. They've not grown up from within church. So he's a voice that's very well worth listening to. It's based in American context, so you do have to do a wee bit of contextualizing. So when he talks about your youth ministry staff team, that's the volunteers that you have, right? And things like that. So when he talks about your youth budget, for some of you, that's that money that somebody sometimes slips you to buy them some pizza sometime. Okay, so there is a wee bit of contextualizing, but it's a very helpful book. And I just want to run through a few things. He talks about this generation Gen Z, and this is really, really, really important. We've called this seminar Fearless Generation. Nothing could be more ironic / prophetic than calling a seminar about young people Fearless Generation, because every measurement suggests that this is one of the most fearful and anxiety-filled generation that we've seen. Mental health statistics are going through the roof, okay? Self-harming, through the roof. Anxiety, bullying, peer pressure, all of these things, and I'm talking about Scottish Western Church, are massively problematic for our young people just now. They may always have been there in previous generations, but for measurably just now, it seems to be that the government's worried about it, society's worried about it, there seems to be a lot more anxiety and fear around the lives of our young people. And I just want to dig into a little bit about this generation. Five things I want to talk about. This generation, I'm talking about under the age of 24, they have grown up post this whole 9/11 thing. They know nothing other than every now and again, generally around summertime, some country in the world, there's some form of terror attack, and it's very well publicised on the media, which goes straight to their phone. They're beyond. For me, I can still remember where I was when 9/11 struck. I was shocked. I went home and we stared at our telly for 6 straight hours watching it. I was shocked. It's not that young folk are not shocked. They just don't know anything other than that. So they're still appalled, but they've lost that shock value. There is a baseline global fear thing that is actually a culture of which these young folk grow up in. And because everything is connected, media-wise, global stories find their way into your pocket instantly. They also were being born or having their younger life round about the global recession that hit in 2008 and all that kind of stuff. They are the first generation that's going to be poorer than the previous generation, statistically. It's going to be hard. It's going to cost more to get educated. It's going to take longer to buy a house if you're ever able to do that. It's going to take, there's a fair chance your job security, you're not going to work in the same place for 40 years, but you may in actual fact now, they reckon somewhere between 3 and 4 careers in your life. Now there's an upside to that because there is it's fostered an entrepreneurialism within the younger people, and they do reckon that through various studies that young people themselves are very entrepreneurially open. They kind of, the apprentice has really kicked in. They kind of think, hey, we could do something. They probably accept, I might have a job, but I'll have a wee side business on the side. And actually, interestingly, what they can measure in various reports, and you can read them all in this Gen Z book, they've found that very often there is not just a money-grabbing aspect to that, I want to make money and have money, but they want to generate wealth for the betterment of other people in other situations. So they are a generation who are socially conscious. Okay, they live in a time that one of the coolest things is social bite. If you think in Scotland, now social bite cafe stuff, that is cool. Not just because George Clooney goes there or other celebrities, but the number of young people that have slept out in the parks in Glasgow and Edinburgh as a result of getting behind a social enterprise program to bring justice, it's measurable, it's stark, the number of folk. They have a conscience, a social conscience. And that is something that we can't miss in the midst of all that is born out of this, growing up in this recession-y, terrorist, global backdrop to where they've been born. Okay, the next thing to recognise about under-24s, and we all know this, they are Wi-Fi enabled. They know nothing but Wi-Fi. They know nothing but touchscreen. In actual fact, and if you look at my TV, I've got a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. My TVs have all got finger marks all over them. None of them are touchscreens, but they don't know anything else than touchscreen. So when they want to change the channel, they go and touch the telly. It's instant connectivity. They can access whatever they want any times. However, lots of studies have shown that there is an increasing chasm between the information and the vast amount of information that they have and wisdom, how to handle it. So we do have a generation who have more information than any generation ever before ever has at their pockets right now. The problems we could solve literally right now with our phones in our pockets is incredible. More information, but there is a question about, that's not wisdom, about how to live life. I'm not going to spend too long talking about pornography, but it has to be recognized that this is the generation that has been most influenced by pornographic content more than any other generation, and that is boys and girls. And we can't, as church, because we get a bit embarrassed and our cheeks go a bit red and it's a bit flustery, not work out that we need to talk about it. We can't be ignorant to the fact that our Christian young people aren't involved in this. They are, because it's impossible not to be. 16.3 billion hits was just one pornography website last year. One website, 16.3 billion hits. That's one website. It's a massive issue. And you need to realize with all this Wi-Fi connectedness, that is right in the pocket. And the reason I want to talk about that is that the effects are quite astounding, okay? Both emotionally, relationally, physically, and of course spiritually. We're going to touch on that very briefly just later on in a wee while. So they are Wi-Fi enabled, recession, terrorism, multiracial. This is the most diverse generation ever born, okay? It's diversity is the norm. Now, it is not unusual. It could be diversity of race or religion within your class. It could also be diversity in terms of how your family is formed, that there is a whole lot of different types of families now represented, and family units that are represented within classes. Also, interestingly, it is, I'm just talking about sex a lot here, but it is measurably what's now called a very sexually fluid generation. In the UK, 49% of a survey of, I think it was 9,000 18 to 24-year-olds found that 49% of them did not define themselves as heterosexual. That's half. Now, they're not all defining themselves as homosexual. They're defining themselves as all manner of things in between. Sexual fluidity. What does it mean to have, what's your identity as a person? The boy-girl thing. It's a real thing that our young people are growing up in. And also the young people that we don't know yet are growing up in. It's really important that we have language and thought through our thoughts and that kind of stuff. But perhaps the most important aspect for us to think through, and it has been for some time, it's not just of Gen Z that this is the case, they are very much a post-Christian generation. They are very much a post-Christian generation. James Emery White in his book says this, and we're going to just pause, and I want you to think about this. Speaking of Gen Z, that is those under the age of 24, they are not thinking about religion and rejecting it. They're just not thinking about it at all. It's so post-Christian. It's not like everyone's rejected Christianity. They just aren't even thinking about it. So what I want you to do is in your tables, I want you to turn to each other around there and actually think about that statement. It's not that young people have rejected Christianity. They just aren't thinking about it. What are the implications for that? For your church, for your youth ministry, and for your young people and the culture that they grow up on? Let's just turn for 5 minutes and talk to each other. Guys, sorry, just keeping the thing going. I know that's not quite enough time. I'll come back at different points to have conversations. It'd be really great just to get a little bit of feedback from some of folks' thoughts on the table. So I wonder if you just go, if folk could be fearless and maybe just cheer back from a few of the tables. That would be amazing. Let's hear back. What were some of the topics? What were some of the thoughts that came out in the table there? It's a refreshingly blank slate. Steak would be great as well, but slate, brilliant. So it's blank, so you're almost like starting at zero. I think I heard someone here going, well, we used to start here in terms of talking about spirituality and God, but now we actually have to start here. I think that's very helpful. Sorry, Gav.
Yeah, we were saying that there is a spiritual hunger from young people.
Yep. And I think it's really important. So spirituality is one thing that's not being necessarily equated as a Christian story, being seen as something that would legitimately fulfill someone's spiritual question. I think there was a Youth for Christ survey recently, and I can't remember the exact number, but it was a very high percentage of young people, teenagers in the UK. They're very into the idea of a spirituality, idea of a creator-y type or a God-y type figure or something beyond. But it was a lot of that could be ghosts and spirits, rather than Jesus and God kind of stuff. Any others?
Question about,
sure.
Especially if they identify not having a random rejection anymore.
Yeah. Okay. It's very helpful. Rejection. It's a real thing when a child grows up in an environment that everything's acceptable and diversity and inclusivity is just the status quo and the norm. But they are quite... Church is not that. Yeah. I do think people generally, I think we could explore that. If we had more time, we could take more time to explore that. Very positive about Jesus and the idea of Jesus. Far more difficulties about church as an organization, as an entity, as a community. And so that's a real challenge for us. If we truly are, as Jim was reminded, is a movement of disciple makers and not a denomination that just perpetuates the same thing all the time, but we're really trying to get folk to live in the way that Jesus lived, that should be actually quite up their street if the measurements are right. They're just not quite seeing that. So I think blank slate, I think Jesus good, church challenging. Is that what you say? Okay, for some young folk to get their heads around. And for us as church, we need to hear that, I think. Okay, anyone get anything else? Okay,
that issue of the fact that many will not know who Jesus is,
yeah,
either, you know, so the language and the communication
But even the fact you're saying there was this guy, the historical evidence for Jesus Christ being a real person is astoundingly large and scientifically proven. A guy called Jesus lived. We are living in a generation that don't necessarily know that. That simple thing as a starting point. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to hear from Liam. Liam, could you come up? That would be great. I'll get your microphone. I just wanted to give here, Liam, how are you?
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, I don't know. Don't touch it. It's on the orange one. It might be because we're down now. Oh, it's there.
Hello.
It's
there. There you go.
So this is Liam. Liam, you are from where? What stage of life are you at? Tell us a wee bit about yourself.
Okay. Hello. My name's Liam. I'm the youth worker at Colladine Baptist Church in Glenrothes. I do feel a bit bad, bearing in mind my minister, my boss, was up not too long ago as well, so I'm trying not to kind of overlap what he said. But I'm 20. I'm in my third year at the Scottish Baptist College as well. There we go. And I suppose I began to work for the church when I was 17 as an intern. Essentially, I was looking for a job, and that was my sole reason for starting to work for the church. And that was a nine-month kind of internship where I got to learn a bit about myself, developed the youth work in the church. At the point when I came to the church, we had about 20, a congregation of 20, hardly any young people at all. So the church just invested in wanting to develop youth work, develop a young person who perhaps had a call to ministry. At that point, I didn't really have any idea what I was going to do with my life. I was just asking Jesus to show me where he wanted me to go. But I'm now 3 years into my nine-month contract. I'm still there, now as the youth and children's worker. And I suppose the church's ethos has always been, how do we grow in relationship with God? How do we grow in relationship with each other? How do we grow in relationship with our community? And that's just kind of trickled down into how we do youth work. So our whole mindset is building relationships. And that's how we do pastoral care, discipleship, just meeting young people, meeting children where they are at. And that might be a case of they have no idea who Jesus is, but they're coming to church to play dodgeball. All these things. So relationship is really just key. That's what we live by. And how we get to know, how we do our youth work in the church. We have a good relationship with the school as well, and that's come from developing a relationship with the school in many ways. So, and the school is an incredible blessing in what we do. The school actually refers some young people who come from troubled areas to come to our clubs. We go in once a week to do stuff in the schools. We do an after-school club, so we're very active in the community, and that's really where our youth work always starts with.
You also talk a wee bit about you offer a service throughout the school holidays as well.
Yep, so we offer free school meals for children. So there's one primary school in the area which the church is in, and we just do free school meals. We have around 40, anywhere between 40 and 60 families. Well, not 60 families, but 60 people who come with children, and they'll get a hot option, get food for free. And we play games and things, and that's just been a really valuable thing. At the moment, we're looking into using that as a way into doing an alpha course with some of these families, all of which these families come from the community, and I've just seen what we're trying to do, just trying to love the community, love God, and that's really appealing to a lot of families who have never, people in their 30s, 40s, who have never even thought about Jesus. Not only are we talking about Gen Zers, but whole families who have never even met or never even thought about who Jesus actually is.
So, Liam, in the past 3 years, you've basically gone from no young people to quite a lot. There's three youth groups that happen throughout the church. There's a lot. They're even engaging in Sunday morning services. Had the joy of being there a couple of weeks ago and meeting a bunch of them. But they have come from completely out with the church, and some of them have come on a journey of faith with that. Can you talk us through, what are some of the challenges that these young folk that you're coming across are actually facing in life? What are the things they actually want to talk about? And how does faith intersect with what they actually want to talk about? Is that...
Yep. Easy question.
Thank you. Nice easy one.
Well, I suppose as David was saying earlier, the church has kind of seen quite a tremendous growth And we have seen young people with families come through that, but the majority of the children we work with come from that point of, we don't even know who Jesus is. But I think that's a great thing, to be honest. They have no kind of issues, no kind of ideas on what theology is a little bit. And we're just asking these questions. They're answering these questions. And we have a house group at the moment that meets on a Monday night. And all of the children, I think, except one who was recently baptized, don't go to church. But they come to youth group and they're asking questions like, what does heaven look like? What does hell look like? How do I become a Christian? How do you tell your parents you become a Christian? What does hell look like? Am I going to hell? So really challenging questions. Nice and easy questions for us to... Our youth team often panic when we have our Bible studies, but it just shows that these young people are starting from no kind of idea of who Jesus is, but they are asking these difficult questions. And they're not easy answers. We don't often have answers, but we just try our best, and we gauge where they're at with that.
Sure.
We had one example of a young person who was recently baptized. He had no church background. And after a chaplaincy assembly we did at the local high school, he decided to Google how to disprove God existed through what we did. And eventually he became a Christian online. He looked up all these things to disprove Christianity, eventually became a Christian, came to the church, and was baptized over the summer. So I just sure the internet isn't a bad place all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's some good things happening online as well.
Fantastic. Liam, it's great. It would be lovely to hear more, and I'm sure if folk wanted to, they could ask and just chat about some of your experiences and wisdom. But one thing, as you observe the young folk, we're talking about a fearless generation, and we do believe that when we are with God, when he is with us, that we can overcome fears, his perfect love casts them out, that we can become free from those fears. What are the fears, or what is there a specific fear or an observation that you've made of the young folk that you're working, that you just, that's your prayer? I wish we could get rid of, God, would you come and get rid of this fear out of these young people's life?
I mean, there's so many. That's the issue. It's hard to pick one. But I think, thinking about it, I think rejection's been something that all generations have really dealt with and struggled with, but particularly, I think, this generation. Rejection from church, even, as we've already said, or from school, or from families, the realities of being rejected by a family, a close family member, not knowing them as... And they are bringing those feelings and into even their spirituality, into their faith, into asking these questions. So I think rejection is a big one. Rejection is something that we all deal with. It's a part of life. But I think if we prayed that rejection wasn't a fear, then I think we'd see so many more young people thrive in amongst all of that. So that would be one thing that I would say.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Liam, let's give Liam a clap, please. Thanks so much. So the reality is, there is lots here that we're at a blank canvas. And what I want to do is I want to just teach you a five-point guide that we use within our youth learning communities to help churches think through what it is they're actually trying to do. If we're trying to make disciples, we've got to accept that most folk, we're using fearless, so it's all going to begin with Fs, okay? Most folk most young people we're dealing with probably start in this situation here, which is as foreigners. They start as foreigners to Jesus, foreigners to idea of faith, foreigners to church, foreigners to all these things. Like Peter in the boat, fishing away before any of that call, come follow me, happened. Just getting on with life, trying to do as best as he can. And the journey of follower is that we want to take folk on in our discipleship as our movement of discipleship gathers speed. We want followers to become more like fans, as Jesus called Peter off the boat. And he was intrigued and he kind of liked it. And he went along he was a bit of a fan of Jesus. He began to, well, that's quite cool. He's just healed someone. He's cast out some demons. That's quite cool. Going to parties is quite good fun with them. Okay, he moved into the fan zone. A fan of Jesus. And then, of course, we see stories like with Peter when he steps out the boat and he's stepping out and following Jesus. He comes to decisions. You can see times that he declares who Jesus is. You're the Messiah, the chosen one. He comes to that stage of being a follower of Jesus. And then you can see one step further. Obviously, Jesus tells his disciples that I called you friends towards the time. He becomes friends of Jesus. And we all, as we mature in our faith and our discipleship, we want to become friends of Jesus. And ultimately, we want to become, Peter messes up, gets reconciled, and there's a whole love-in around breakfast with fish with Jesus, and Jesus recommissions him, and he comes back into his family, where he uses the language of him looking after the sheep. That was Jesus' job. He brought him into the family business of looking after the sheep and reconciled family. How do we move from foreigner to family? And most of us, if we're honest, we do some variation. And I speak as someone who's been a youth pastor and volunteer youth worker for many years. We still probably start somewhere assuming there's some kind of knowledge. And we probably start somewhere around the fan zone area, hoping to follow that. And it's variations of Bible study we tend to go to. And we tend to, traditionally, we went for, I've got a bunch of information, I will now give you that information. You've got it. Happy days, that's us all sorted. It's not as, it was never as simple as that. But it's definitely not as simple as that. We need to have think as a church, what in our current practices are for the foreigners? Within the life of your church, what is it that's in the foreigners, and how is a foreigner meant to get to a fan of Jesus? And how is a fan of Jesus meant to get to an event decision? And that we need to have relational continuums for discipleship. But there are points that people just give their life to Jesus. It's still a proper thing. There needs to be the moment that people pray some things and actually go, I'm doing business with God right here and then. What are those points? Where do we offer them in a year within the life of our church? And then how do we help develop the maturity of their faith towards friendliness with Jesus? Increasing independence, and in that family sense of actually having responsibility within the Christian community. How do we work that out as a church? Do we ever stop to think about that? What I would like you to do is just turn back to the groups there, and actually using that five-stage thing, I'll rerun through it again so you don't need to panic. Foreigner, fan, follower, friend, family. Okay, currently, where do the things that you do for young people sit within your church? Is there any obvious gaps, just as you first of all kind of consider that? Is that okay? Let's turn and have a wee chat with the folk next to you. We've ran low in time there again, sorry. If we can come back again. So we'll maybe not spend too much time looking at some of the answers at this point, but I do want you to consider that it's a very helpful, I certainly found it helpful in any position I've had to think of that continuum of that moving in from foreigner friend and the work that I do. Now, there's what we're going to do is we're just going to use a wee bit of that model and explain a couple of things that are happening where some of our churches are working together to create options that you can join in with that are meant to help and enable that kind of stuff happening, some of these transition points that happen. So the first area we want to talk about a wee bit, I wanted to spend a wee bit of time thinking about, you know, what do we do in this whole foreigner towards, through fan into, foreigner, follower, that's what I'm at. I'm follower when I'm standing here. How can we help do that? We mentioned very briefly in the stage in the last session, I just want to take a wee bit more time to explain about the Project 1010, which is a project that we run. Alpha's going to come in a minute and just share a wee bit with that and take you through that. But the idea is of behind this project is very simple. It's called Project 1010, the idea being 1010, John 1010, I've come that they may have life and life to the full. It is a project designed for unchurched foreigner teenagers to go on a journey that hopefully results in them at some point becoming fans into followers and then hopefully going on a journey of maturing in faith through friendship and family. And it's available to all of our churches. Some who are more rural, it's slightly more complicated to get an old double-decker bus to you. But I've talked to the Eden guys and they're well up for trying to work out how they can do that. Okay, so we're currently doing it in and around Glasgow, but we're chatting to Oban about doing it up there in a different format as well. But Alpha, could you come? Alpha is one of the interns. He's also, not to be confused, if you receive an email from alpha@scottishbaptist.org.uk, we are not shamelessly backing one particular evangelistic resource. Alpha is a person, okay? So some of you will get emails from Alpha and maybe think we're just being slightly biased towards, we're not. That's his name. Okay, so this is Alpha. Alpha administers within the life of the union the relationship between Eden and Alpha and getting churches hooked up with doing Project 1010. He's going to just share a wee bit about the Project 1010.
Right. Hello. Hello. Is this on? There's another one. Oh, hello. There we go. Hi. Hello. Yeah, so I'm Alpha. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about Project 1010. And we heard a little bit earlier from Kirsty. But basically what it is, it's a big double-decker bus with games, climbing walls, nail bars, and just things to basically keep young people entertained. So as we build relationships with them week to week. But the general idea is the way it's built is before the bus arrives, there's some training on how to do things on the bus, how to talk to young people, but you guys probably know that. So that's the training before the bus arrives. But as we work out practicalities, we get the bus to you, and it doesn't have to be in the same format as it's been done so far. But basically the idea is for 6 weeks, on one night a week, the bus turns up, and for, is it 2 hours? Around 2 hours. Yeah, sure. So around 2 hours, it's there, and we encourage you to invite as many kids as you can. I think we'll hear later from Ruth and Kirsty. Where's Kirsty? She's not here. Oh, right in the back. About how they've been doing it, but basically what they're trying to do is get some flyers in the local school or get the youth group themselves to kind of invite their friends just to get them a little bit involved. And basically, so week to week, we just focus on building relationships with the team from the church, from the kids of the church, so that eventually we run a youth alpha course at the end, at the back of it. As Kirsty said earlier, the first week of the alpha course will be on the bus just to get them a little bit more comfortable with the idea because it's quite a change. But then up to week 16, I think it is, or 17, depending where it is, you just go through the alpha course with them, just really answer any questions and just go through the course. Yeah, I think quite, and has anyone here done the youth alpha course before? Yeah, it's quite a few. Thanks, Des. So what you basically do is go through the youth alpha course and just really introduce them and hopefully go from foreigner to a fan and maybe even a follower, depending on the questions asked. So what I'm going to do, instead of me telling you a whole bunch of stuff, is I'm going to get Ruth and Kirsty to come up and they'll tell us a little bit about their experience with it. So at the moment, there's three Project 1010s going on. One Knightswood, one in Dumbarton, and the other one, The Rock?
It's The Rock in Dumbarton.
The Rock also in Dumbarton. Three questions for both of you. We'll save the last one for later. Is how have you / your team found it so far? How have your youth team found it so far? And one highlight.
Oh, man. Okay. How have our team found it so far? Was that the first question? Okay. Our team were apprehensive at first, as I said earlier. But have now really got into the flow of things. Kind of the 6 week period is a really good length of time, I think, because it kind of allows not only your team to get to know each other. I don't go to Dumbarton Baptist Church. I'm just connected to it through other ways. But it's been really nice for me as well to get to know another church. And so as the kids come in, and our kids are total foreigners, we literally, as I'm sure you guys are as well, actually, our bus is parked, or the Eden bus is parked, just in the middle of an ex-council estate that is just filled with young people, and none of them even know where Dumbarton Baptist Church is. So they are complete foreigners, and it's been amazing the conversations that come out of that. One of our highlights, I kind of gave a little hint to it earlier on as well, is that quite a few of our young people have now really started to engage with the idea of prayer, that they're not just kind of talking to the sky, that they're talking to someone, that they're connecting with the other people on the bus, or connecting with us as the leaders, and what they pray about, and they're being more open about that as well. The idea of using the Lord's name in vain, saying things like, oh my God, or Jesus Christ, when something goes wrong, that we have shut that down. And we've kind of, which I found really hard at first, because like, this guy's like 6'4", and I'm like, oh, can you not say that, please? But now he's like, hey, Kirsty, how you doing? Like, and it's amazing. We had three young guys come on, effing and blinding. They just wanted a game on the Xbox, just wanted a game of FIFA, which is fine, because that's what the bus is there for as well, to provide that community with what they want and with what they need. But it provided this opportunity for us to say, like, hey, look, there's a God slot. If you finish this game up, we're going to start our God slot, and we're going to talk about who Jesus is. And they were like, no, we are not up for that. So they left. But they came back the next week, and they sat in on the God slot and were asking some really good questions, because they went home and were chatting to each other and were like, here, that Jesus thing doesn't seem so bad, eh? Because they seem like all right people, because we got a game of FIFA for free and we got pizza. Domino's pizza has saved the Eden bus, I'm telling you right now. It's been amazing, and I get pizza every Monday night too. Does that answer your questions?
Thank you. Yeah, so our youth team last year took our own young people through Youth Alpha. So there's about 16 or 18 of them. And because of that, the four of us were quite enthused to try something different and to get the foreign kids in, as it were, since we're using that. I thought, and I suppose I would say, the first night there was nearly 60 kids. And so taking away the 18 that are ours and their pals, there was a lot of kids who you'd say, well, they are the kids that are the foreign kids. But actually, when we started chatting to them, and I knew a lot of faces, and actually, although they are totally unchurched kids, most of them said, oh, actually, we've been in your church building before, because I run primary 1 and primary 7 workshops at Easter and Christmas, and they're always in our church. And so actually, a lot of them said, oh, actually, we've been in your building before. So although they're completely unchurched, they had, bizarrely enough, been in our church before, and we parked our bus, the bus outside our church, which is actually just on the same street as a secondary school, which again I go into as a chaplain. So actually, I knew some of their faces because I'm a chaplain in the school. So although they were not churched, there was connection, and then the kids that we have in our church already were pals with some of them, and so it was amazing actually a number of connections that there already were. When we met up with the kids who came on. And I probably would admit to almost having a lack of faith in two ways. We've got a team of four in our youth, and if I were to ask the church, our church are good at supporting things. They totally get behind whatever's going on. But if I'd said we need some more people to come and help with the youth on a Friday night, they probably wouldn't have put themselves forward. But we decided that we'd have the church hall open in case there was enough kids. There's 40 kids is the limit on the bus. And I said, well, in case there's more than 40, not that there probably ever will be, I was thinking in my head, but in case there's somewhere for the kids to go that can't go on right away. So we'll open up our church hall and we'll do hot chocolate and home baking, and I'll put out the pool table and the table tennis and all that kind of stuff. So we did that. And because I said from the front of the church, if you could contribute baking, or if you want to come make hot chocolate, I got a whole pile of people said, you know, the kind of people who think they're too old to be working with young people, they're not good with young people, but they'll come along and make the hot chocolate. And those people are the people that are in the hall. We've had more kids, so we've had kids. The kids love going in and out the bus and into our church hall, having a hot chocolate and coming back out again. They love the idea that they're free to do that, and they're all dead independent. But see, when they're in the hall, they are chatting away to these people that are not any good with the young people. And it's just been amazing at how many of our own church people have realised that actually they are quite good with young people, because they just have to be interested in them. And it's been great. And some of the parents and grandparents who've dropped the younger side of the youth off to come on the bus have actually just come in and had hot chocolate as well. So we've kind of got to know families in that way. So that's one thing that the team has been, you know, we've been really encouraged as a team. The kids, like Kirsty said, the first week we said there's going to be a wee God slot thing, you know. You can almost apologize. I don't know why we do this in church, but you almost apologize for the, it'll only be 5 minutes, you know, it'll be really quick, stay on the bus. And the first one wasn't done by us. It was one done by the guy on the bus, really, that brings the bus along. He said, oh, I've got a talk, I'll do the first one. And he did his talk, and he said that we always have a wee bit at the end where we sort of get together and regroup and see how the night's gone. And he said, I was a wee bit kind of put off, he said, because I didn't expect them to listen. So when they all sat quietly, I just didn't quite know how to handle that. And they did. They totally listened. And by week three, same as you, by week three, I went into the hall in the church to say, by the way, we're just about to do the wee five-minute God thing. I was about to say, you don't need to come on, but just to let you know it's happening. Not one of them stayed. They were all like, oh, yeah, that's great. We'll come on, listen to that. So just, it's been amazing. Just the people that we've had, the kids that we've had on, they don't come from church, but they're totally on board with what's going on. And I think just because we're doing something where we're not tricking them into coming along to church. It's something that is beneficial to them. There's an entertainment, there's somewhere to go on a Friday night, but we're also just showing them that we love them and we want to get to know them and we want to share good stuff with them. So it's been really, really good. Yeah.
If you guys can stick around, there's one more thing afterwards. But just from that, I think it's it really gets the idea across of the project is to empower the church. So having people step up and the tagline is do the hard work to reach young people. And it empowers your young people as well, because you might have some of your kids as well who are feeling more involved. I think we were just having a chat here about the key to keeping us at least in church was to get us involved in the church, get us to feel like we're making things happen as well. And it's also about empowering your community. Just having people that haven't had the word of God spread to them. And having an easy way to do that.
Yeah.
So one last question for both of you is, if there are people here thinking, not quite for us, or it wouldn't work in our setting, what would you say to them?
It would work in your setting, and it is for you. I think the biggest apprehension would possibly be that you feel like you're not cut out to deal with so many kids all in one place. Because it's a double-decker bus at the end of the day. That's where you are. But one of the biggest encouragements for me was that Ray, who comes with the bus, he's the driver. He's not like brought out a cupboard. He's the driver. Is fantastic. He's so good. He is so passionate about seeing young people work and young people come to Jesus. He's been a really, really good support for our team. But also, like, don't be put off by the fact that we're like, oh, yeah, our kids really want to hear the God slot. And you're like, our kids would not want to hear that. Because, again, you're on a double-decker bus. So even if they sit downstairs, they're probably still going to hear you. But also, the God slot is not like, so John 3:16 says that God so loved the world. Like, it is, we've had God slots about dog poo. We've had God slots where I gave a kid a fiver. We did the classic, like, oh, look at this perfect fiver. Do you want it? He said no. I was so confused by that. But now I gave him a fiver. The rest of the kids don't like me anymore, but that's okay. So the God slot is something that Ray has weeks worth of them as well. It is completely ready to go when you go on, which is such an encouragement as well. It literally is a youth group on wheels. It's fantastic. It is a real, real encouragement, actually. Mm-hmm. And you get to better your rock climbing skills over 6 weeks, which, why would you not want to do that?
Actually, I've not been allowed to go in the climbing wall. Just, that might just be me, I'm not sure. I think for me, what I would say to encourage you is, I was, again, probably a lack of faith. I was hesitant because I thought, we're going to park this. How are we going to get the bus parked? We're in a residential street. There's a double yellow line right outside our church. So the double-decker bus has to be parked behind that, which is right in front of certain people's houses. I know there's one of the neighbours really isn't that keen on our alarm going off during the night and has never been that positive with us since it did several times a couple of years ago. And I thought, well, how are we going to get this to work? We're not going to be popular. Why are the kids are not going to come? They don't walk past normally at night. How is this going to work out? I went and knocked on the doors of our neighbours to explain that we were going to have a massive double-decker bus, probably a lot of music, maybe some troublesome young people, and, you know, every Friday night for 6 weeks. And I was praying as I was going to the doors and knocking the doors, thinking, I'm going to, you know, it's going to be difficult. Every single door that I went to, someone opened it and said, that is fantastic what you're doing. How can we help? And of course, we will not park our cars in front of our drive, you know, in front of our houses for those 6 weeks at night. That's no problem. And they really haven't. And they've been supportive. The kids have come. And as Kirsty says, see if you think, I don't know how we're going to cope with that. It's a double-decker bus with Ray on it, with all the resources. You don't need to do anything. You will learn over time, but you don't need to be worried about it.
I'm sorry, we're running out of time, guys, but that was great. That was great. Thank you. So that is available. Just practically, Alpha administers that. If you're interested, speak to Alpha. There is a cost associated, and I want to be really upfront about that. Alpha is free to leave you as a church money to buy food so that you can feed kids with hot chocolate and pizza or whatever, okay? The bus is at minimum cost, but it still costs quite a lot to insure, fuel, and staff. It costs £1,200 for 6 sessions. However, Eden have found a £100 discount that you can find from them, and we actually, Peter Dick, discovered a secret outreach fund that he said I could tell you all about that currently has a sizable amount of money in it that is open to all who are endeavouring to do outreach. So it means that we are in a position that not only can we put it all together, we can actually seriously reduce the cost of that to make that really doable. And then that allows you to work out how do we even pull a team together. And if you are really struggling for a team, do come and speak to us because we might be able to push and pull. We're in conversations with one church just now about trying to help them, partnering with them to develop a team that could run that as well. Speak to Alpha, he will note your details and inquiries, but thanks for doing that. Guys, we're really short on time. I just want to touch on a couple of things very quickly before we go on this journey of moving from foreigners right the way through to family. The couple of things just to say is there are great things happening in Scotland that are not us doing them, but we want to be partnering with, and I would just encourage you to be partnering with. There's the PowerPoint network of worship events. Now, you might think worship events, surely that's at the up here at the follower into family. What you will find is every month, without fail, young people give their life to Jesus and go to a Christian worship event where all they do is sing Christian songs and hear someone teach from the Bible. And that kind of works in terms of opening conversations and moving. So it very much is something to encourage young folk, wherever they're at in that journey, towards. Soul Survivor, we're partnering with Soul Survivor, and whatever may come next in the summer slot in terms of putting tents together. Westwood, we might not have time to tell the story, but of the eight that came, four of the young girls that came from Outwith Church came to that, gave their life to Jesus in the midst of that, and are in a process of trying to work out what that means now. But they have a community of faith to help work that out with them. There are incredible things out there. The work of Scripture Union Scotland, incredible organisation with incredible resources out there for you to join in with. I want to talk about a couple of things that are really important. I've ran over a little bit. Leadership development. Alpha mentioned, you know, the young guys, they all said, when we got involved and we began to own our faith, it helped us actually do this journey. It helped us do this journey, that involvement. And that's why we really want to be encouraging churches to be thinking, how do you develop your young people into leaders earlier? Okay? We want to do that well. We want to put support systems in place to help them do that. We want to put training in place. We want to put encouragements in place. And we want to give them real things that actually really matter. Okay? I grew up in a generation that I was allowed to hand out the notice sheet on coloured A4 coloured bit of paper, and I got to hand it out. That was my leadership responsibility till I was about 17, when I jumped from that to, there's the keys for the kids' room. You're now head for the four and five, primary fours and primary fives. We didn't have a plan. We do need to have a plan for what we're trying to do here. It's so, so important. I wanted to just highlight two things. for you in terms of leadership development. There are lots of great organizations doing great leadership development. We've mentioned Scripture Union. They've got a whole program. You could tap into that. We have just recently done the One Life Conference. We had a whole bunch of young people there getting really inspired and equipped to be great leaders. That was high school aged. We're in a great position that we have worked really closely with Deep Impact, which is a children's and youth work conference that happens in Aviemore at the McDonald Highland Resort. It's third weekend in January. Now, that is for children's workers and family workers, volunteer or full-time. It's for youth workers, volunteer or full-time or part-time in between. It's also got a young leader stream for 18 to 25-year-olds, which is a conference with some excellent speakers and some excellent input and process to help those in that kind of bracket, the 18 to 25 bracket, really grow in their confidence to be seen as leaders. But also then, we do need churches to allow them to lead. And that means allow them to make mistakes and to fall and allow them to actually change some stuff. Okay? So that's very abbreviated leadership thing. One of the things we're also doing is the internship program. So I think maybe we might just need to finish with a thing a little bit. Ailey, if you could come up and be... The heart behind the internship program is we want to be churches that develop young leaders from within. And there's great... I'm looking around here. There's great churches that are doing this already really, really well. We just want to create a framework, and when we work together, we could do something that's really good. They could create an option that a church, if you have someone who's 17, maybe coming to the end of school, or maybe they've been in college and coming to the end of college, or maybe they're just, as happens, not quite sure of what's going on in life at the age of 18, and they're loosely around the edges. We've created this program that allows them to take a gap year, and we really are encouraging that to happen in their local church, if possible. As far as possible, so that the local church begins to think through, we are developing our own leaders here. We're not sending them away. This is not a cheap labor plan or we'll go and send them to another church. There might be circumstances that could happen, but primarily it's about developing from within. And one of the young leaders this year is Ailey at Kirkie. We heard from her early briefly. I just wonder if you could, cut it down. But if you just cut the essence of just what you're enjoying about this and why you're doing this.
I think for me, definitely, it was, a little bit different for me because I'd sort of gone through university, but I still came to an end point and had to decide where I was going to go from there. And that was a real period of searching, but eventually decided that God was calling me to do the internship. But for me, just working full time in my church is like you have so many people around you, and especially like what you were just touching on about being discipled and. One of the things that I'm involved in is worship leading, and I feel that I've learned so much already from this year. It's only been 2 months, but from that side of things, I've got people around me who are mentoring me, and so with my new role, I can then go in and mentor. We have a big youth band in the church, so that's one of the things that I can look at and see and then pass on to other people below me, the young people that I'm now working with full-time, which is amazing. Really exciting. So in terms of like learning my gifts and seeing where God is leading me in those gifts, there's things that I had never considered before I sort of applied for the internship, which have been called out in me and I've sort of sought to act on. So that like personal things as well, but also things that I can pass on to the young people I'm working with, which is really exciting and amazing, and I'm loving it so far.
Fantastic. Thank you. Just to say a couple of things, we've literally got a couple of minutes there. The internship will roll out in January. There'll be a communication around all the churches to say that this is going to be open for interview. And we do go through quite a strict process of application for young folk who want to come on board and do this, because we want to test things. We want to make it not easy. We want to put some legitimate challenges in there. If you have folk in your churches, feel free to encourage them to consider applying for that. It seems to be going really well so far, and we hope to develop more leaders. There's one aspect, and I'm going to do this in 30 seconds, in the whole area of fearless leadership that we touched on. Here's the thing. The truth is, at the end, all these guys are doing the Project 1010 stuff. At the end of 60 weeks, they're going to have a problem. They're going to have a problem in that they're going to have a bunch of young folk who don't know a thing about Sunday morning at 10:30, 11 o'clock, or 11:15, some seem to do as well, they don't do church. But they're in a journey of discipleship. And the reality is, as churches, we are going to have to grapple with what is it, are we happy and okay with the fact that they may never come to our services? They may never come to our services. Are we okay with that? What are we trying to do? Are we trying to make disciples? Are we trying to fill the pews and the seats? And that is a challenge for all churches. No one can tell anyone what to do. Every church has to come to that themselves. But they have to come to the decision. There are certain component parts that make up a church, right? If that is happening, does it really matter when and where that's happening? That's one of the challenges. And we don't have time to really spend too much time about it. Martin talked a lot about the learning communities for whole churches. We also run youth learning communities, which you can get the details from me, which is a journey that we can go on other churches together to explore questions like, we've got a bunch of 16 young folk that have come to faith through this Project 1010, what on earth do we do with them? And helps journey with other churches working together to work out how on earth we do that. Okay, we're going to just finish, but I think it's really important. One of my favourite stories, it's always been my favourite story, but I think it's appropriate, is Acts 4. And it was in a place where the church were aware of the challenges facing them because they had just been told, because Peter and John went to pray, they healed a lame man on the way, then they said a bunch of stuff and annoyed folk and ended up in jail. And then they came and told the church what was going on, and they were scared, but they prayed. And I think through all of this, prayer has to be at the absolute heart of raising, seeing a fearless generation rise up. And prayer has to look more than just a polite round the circle once and then home off for a wee coffee. It has to be real prayer that's going to reach the depth of our soul. I've heard, there's someone I've heard say a number of times, you know, if it doesn't move you, your prayers, why are you expecting it to move God? Well, I think in the graciousness of God, it probably does. But actually, there is something about that. Is it on our heart, and are we allowing our prayers to be emotive for this generation? Because I think it's there. They've heard stories here that when they can get through all the rubbish and they hear about Jesus, they're not disinterested. The quote at the start was, they don't do Jesus not because they've rejected him. They just haven't heard. They've ignored because they didn't know. So we need to pray that the spirit of the age is silenced and cleared so that we can actually proclaim Jesus to young people. Because Jesus is still the power to save. The gospel is the power of God to save lives. Still is. It's good news. It's good news. And as we believe that and hold on to that and pray that in, young folk do come to faith and still come to faith. So let's take a moment just to pray. Why don't we just stand together, if that's okay? And just round the tables, if you could just quickly say the churches represented, then just take time to pray and blast the churches that are represented round this table here. For the folk that are represented here in this room, that we all want to see young people come to hear about you, Jesus, and encounter you, Jesus. And we want to pray, the Spirit of God, that you would give us all wisdom and discernment to know how best to handle that in our context, in our situations. Would you give us faith when we need it, Father? Would you encourage us in faith? And would you help us encourage one another as we seek to work together to share the good news of Jesus relevantly to the young people, to the families, to the children of this nation, that they have an opportunity to respond to the brilliantness that is your gospel. We thank you for this time in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Thank you so much, guys. I think it's now dinner time. You can clap for dinner time as well.